Welcome, everybody, to the Depth of Motherhood podcast. I'm your host, Danielle. Today, Kristen joins us on the show. She is a specialist in womb medicine, and she's here to share her insights on healing hormones, optimizing fertility, and nourishing the postpartum period. In this episode, there is this beautiful merging of the wisdom from Chinese medicine and also her own experiences. And there is this way of looking at a woman as a whole. All layers are seen. And in the realm of traditional Chinese medicine, Kristen shares that there is this beautiful framework that celebrates the intrinsic dance of yin and yang. And through this balance of yin and yang, it propels us forward and nurtures all layers of our being. And a very clear message comes about through this episode that our bodies are not broken. And when we come to understand more about yin and yang, we can understand more about how our bodies are at peace when there is a balance within these energies. She shares about how her own experience of a painful menstrual cycle led her to this initiation to understanding her own body more deeply. From that, she has been receiving these insights, these wisdom to help other women. I really hope that you enjoy this episode with us today. And to find out more about what Kristen is sharing, go and take a look in the show notes where you can find her Instagram handle and her website. Through her Instagram, she's sharing daily bites of wisdom, which I absolutely love. And these are threads that you can follow to gain more information. And we will be starting the live gatherings again. This begins on the 26th of November, and we'll have one every single month. So if you're not part of the membership yet, you can find the link in the show notes. Once you're a member, you'll get access to all the past recordings, which have workshops on body literacy, somatic movement, and rituals for bringing you back to your body and connecting to nature more deeply. Every month I'll be sending out a womb heart forecast, and this is to inspire you to create your own rituals and ceremonies dedicated to what will be coming in the month ahead. So we'll be looking at morning and nighttime rituals, rituals to connect you to the different phases of the moon. And there's so much more in there, so I hope you get some time to go and check it out. So in our personal update, we are preparing to move. We're heading back into UK territory to be closer to my family. So we're packing up, saying our goodbyes, and I've just had a beautiful Waltaska. I don't know if I'm saying that right. It's an Andean practice for postpartum women, and I hope that I will get this episode out to you where my beautiful sisters will be sharing exactly what happened in the ceremony, how they held that space, and what these rituals mean involved in the ceremony. And I'll be sharing my own experience of it because it was so beautiful, so tender, but also took me to some limits in many ways. But my sisters were there by my side, laying next to me as I crossed over this bridge. And yeah, it's nearly been 3 years since I gave birth to Araya, but my body still held the memories of what happened. And the next day when I woke up, I felt so light and playful, and I noticed differences in Araya as well. So it's magical and much needed for my body. More about that later on. But for now, I just want to send you so much love, and I hope that you enjoy this episode. Let's just take a moment to take a few deep breaths and see where we're at today. Thank you for listening. Welcome, everybody, to the Depths of Motherhood podcast. I'm your host, Danielle. This week, Kristen joins us on the show. Welcome. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here with you.
Me too. I'd love to start off with you sharing a little bit about what you do and where did this drive and passion come from for sharing all the work that you do in the world?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, such an interesting question and something that's like I'm always noticing how it shifts over time and how what I share about myself even changes. So currently I'm a mother of three and I'm sort of going through a big transition as I just gave birth almost 6 months ago. But with all of that said, I'm an acupuncturist by training and an herbalist. And I've spent the last 8 years practicing in that capacity. And prior to that, my sort of entry into the healing world was through the yoga and meditation communities and then birth work. I was really always drawn to women's health through my own challenges and my own sort of lineage struggles even. Mm-hmm. It was a combination of sort of the physical factors that I needed to heal some deep seated menstrual challenges alongside a rupture that I had with my mother that sort of reflected in my own body in a variety of ways. So it's sort of through this alchemy process of healing my relationship with the inner feminine and like inner mothering, as well as addressing like all these physical layers that we sort of navigate in the modern world, that I came to offer and really commit myself to bringing what I call womb medicine forward, or like really resourcing women fertility through postpartum for hormonal resilience.
Wow. Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. I'm curious to how your journey looked in a nutshell. What was it that actually, what was the thing that started opening you up? And what, how did you even realize that there was something happening?
I mean, I think the entry point was just pain, like physical pain, emotional pain. And I think that is often the entry point for a lot of women, is sort of this realization that some challenge that they're having, it's not really being met in the modern medical paradigm in the way that even makes sense to the body, that makes sense like to the psyche. And I think that was sort of what woke up that sort of that passion and drive within myself, and just that desire, like that sort of desire to change and to feel better in my body. And then finding out like what is actually going to like help the situation that I was in and what's actually going to lead to some level of transformation. So I also have the benefit that I come from a family, like my family of origin was already more into alternative healing methods. My dad's a chiropractor. So I was sort of exposed to a lot of these kinds of things from a younger age. So when I even considered studying medicine, like traditional Western medicine, I realized that my entire framework for how to view the body and how to interact with the body was not that framework. Was like that was not the framework from which I understood the world. So I think because I had that background, it was easier for me to go forward and be like, oh, of course, Chinese medicine, it makes sense to me. Like it's based in the natural world. It can help me orient to my body in a different way that's sort of outside the lens of more mechanistic or pathological viewpoints. So that really was also like just a gift that I had as far as maybe not needing to go as far into the medical model as some other women that I see before I knew, okay, this is actually not going to work the way I anticipated or would actually want to integrate into my life.
Oh, wow. And that is why I love coming to your page, because you share it in such a way that's like tangible, like it makes sense, even though you're working with this ancient practice. But it's so familiar, the way that you word it. You're really able to put them words to it to make me feel like, wow, I haven't thought about it from that point of view. Or thank you for reminding me, because there's so much ingrained that I'm feeling all the time. Like I'm constantly trying to peel back layers, but they're like conditioned beliefs run so deep and they surprise me all the time. And I'm like, what is this? Where did this come from? Like, oh my gosh.
Yeah. So you were saying like about your menstruation and how that was that the thing that was bringing you pain originally?
Yeah. So I had a pretty normal menarche, like the first flow that I had was pretty normal. It was pretty normal for like a few years after that, which includes some irregularity for most young girls as their brain and ovaries start that communication process. And that can take some time to regulate. And I thought, okay, yeah, like my period seemed fine. I kind of viewed it differently, totally differently than I do now. I had the sense that it was like this very powerful thing. At the same time, it was like, how can I minimize it? Like, I'm going to keep going with my regular day-to-day life, like even though I'm bleeding, because I just didn't have the education to show me another way. With that said, there was a lot of things happened in my personal life. Then, like, my parents got divorced. I, you know, moved locations. Like, it was just moved houses, at least, not locations necessarily. But there was a lot that happened during that time. And that was when I had a big rupture with my mom. And it was around that time, like retrospectively, that's probably when I started having the pain. And like, I was going through a lot of psycho-emotional stress. I started sort of drinking alcohol to like numb that emotional pain. And yeah, that's when I like started developing physical symptoms too. That was a reflection of what was going on inside, as well as the psycho-emotional regulation piece. So yeah,
that was... time she comes into the room. Usually, yeah. 10 minutes in, she like pops herself in here. So
okay, great.
Thank you.
Yeah, so it was really the pain of that I felt in my womb space with menstruation that initiated all of this for me.
I think it's amazing how you're talking about the layers of this, because it's so easy to get stuck on one, either the mind or the body. Mm-hmm. And as you were saying, there's so many different things that were happening in your life to take into account. And I'm curious to how like Chinese medicine has helped you to incorporate everything. How does it work on the body? How does it act on all levels, especially like focusing on menstruation as well? I mean, I'm sure it just flowed through to everything, but yeah. How does
it work? Well, I didn't get into Chinese medicine initially. So I started having period problems when I was like 16 or so. And I didn't find Chinese medicine for several years later. However, as I started to understand Chinese medicine and I was kind of just naturally drawn to it, the reason why I love it so much is that it starts to change the way you orient to the body. So instead of you viewing the body as these different systems that, you know, are for different things and sort of breaking things down so much, it weaves different layers and it weaves how different systems work together. And it also requires that you sort of learn a new language or a new framework for relating to the body. So I really loved that. And it really helped me to start to simplify things in a way, right? It's like, okay, you start with these very simple principles of yin and yang. How are yin and yang interacting in our natural world? You can sort of learn about yin and yang just by observing nature. So I loved that. It was like really easy for me to start to integrate that. And then you learn about the different vital substances of the body. So you learn about blood and qi and jing. And these are all different terms for expressions of yin and yang in the body. And so I think that really helped me kind of create a foundation. And then, you know, many years obviously went by between when I was 16 and now. That was like 20 years ago. But once I started studying Chinese medicine and implementing it for myself in my own life, and then I also started teaching workshops, like even when I finished my studies, and then I started my practice. So then I was also working with women one-on-one. And it's just a complete system. It's a complete system of understanding the body, of being able to work with what are called patterns. So rather than looking at disease as disease and pathology, it's like, oh, this is a pattern that we're working with in the body right now. This may be your tendency right now, but you also, through studying Chinese medicine, you can also learn what are your constitutional strengths, right? So what are the pieces of your physiology that we can tap into that will support areas that may need more support or are weaker, or however you want to view that. So I think there's a lot up in the collective right now, especially with a lot more people sharing about German New Medicine and people starting to understand that it's not just like how our physiology, as we understand it with the Western mind, how we understand our physiology to start making, things that develop into symptoms or whatever it is. It's like there's this whole intricate process happening. And I think Chinese medicine is one way to understand that, as far as there's such a deep psycho-emotional component to the medicine system through the elements and through the organs, especially like certain organs have spirits associated with them, like spirits of your own soul. And I think that piece is just like so fascinating and rich, especially for women who, you know, in our womb space, it's like we carry our lineage, we carry our soul essence. It's like all of these things. And it's been this point of contention in the Western paradigm. So now I'm kind of speaking to like, it's been this point of contention during the time of organized patriarchal religion and this mechanistic view of the body. And I'm kind of going on a tangent now, but all of that to say,
good,
like,
I love it.
All of that to say that through this framework, you can really shift out of that Western paradigm that tells you your body's broken. Your body's a derivative of a male's body. Mm-hmm. And the only way to heal is through, you know, suppressing pain through like pharmaceuticals or otherwise, cutting it out, right? Surgery. So that's a very common one in the Western paradigm, is like, okay, you have a cyst, you have a fibroid, you have this, you have that. Let's just cut it out. Mm-hmm. Or turn off the hormonal system. Like, it's causing too much chaos, just turn it off.
Like, oh my gosh, yeah.
By using hormonal contraceptives. So it's really like a step away from that entire model to understand like, oh, your body's actually adapting to its environment. There's a reason why these things are happening. There's a general pattern that makes sense as to why you're experiencing whatever the thing is for you. So maybe it is pain. Maybe it's heavy bleeding. Maybe you're struggling with fertility. Whatever the thing is, there's usually a reason once we start to try to understand like why that's happening.
Oh, yeah. It reminds me of something that I listened to recently with Ram Dass. And he was like, when you walk into a room, you like, there's a reason you're there. There's all these layers. There's all these happenings, like illness, whatever it is, the symptoms. But underneath, there's someone there within that body, like looking out at you. And to see that, and it reminds me of what you're talking about. It's like seeing the full picture and not just having this, what's on the table right now. And in the women's circles that I hold online, there's been something that's come up over and over again of women cringing when it comes to the word womb, or even doing any womb practices at all. Like literally they're saying their body inside cringes when I use the word womb, or if the practice that day is going to be dropping into that space. And it's really also interesting to see how logically from themselves, there wasn't a link made to their the way that they were perceiving life, experiencing themselves, their mental health, how they didn't see that link to that resistance of being in the womb space. Mm-hmm. And the things that you're saying is like how everything is held, how there's so much held there. There's so much held within our body in general, but within our womb space, and bringing in what it means to be a woman. And that needs to be looked at as a whole. And if I could just go back a moment to when you said yin and yang, because this is kind of like, It's something that's all over social media right now. It's like that term yin and yang and feminine and masculine. The other words I'm trying to say, feminine and masculine, like linked together and kind of blurred as well. Could you give a simple way of explaining what they mean and how we can maybe tune into them today?
Yeah. So I like to really say up front, like, it's best if you're first starting to learn about yin and yang to not think as much about these concepts of feminine and masculine, because then we bring in so much cultural narrative with us that it's hard for us to really feel what's happening, right? To really observe and feel in a deeper way. Because if you just, like, if you wrote the word feminine on a piece of paper and then just like free associate with that word, you would probably be surprised at some of the things that come up. So putting those kind of terms to the side, like the yin is more feminine. Yes, we could say that, but let's like back up one layer and think of like the yin and yang as these two forces of nature that they must coexist. So without one, you don't have the other. They're what's called mutually dependent in that way. They also embody this capacity of inner transformation, meaning like one holds the seed of the other. So if you think of the yin yang symbol, right, you have the dark half of the circle and it has a seed of the white or the light part of the circle. So within yang is the seed of yin. Within yin is the seed of yang. So yin is more our substance, like the substance of the body. Yin is like the earth. It's like soil. It is nighttime. It's the moon in comparison to yang, which is like movement, activity, daylight hours. It's the processes of the body and how we create energy. How we move through the world is more yang. So we each contain both and need both, as I've kind of alluded to. And it's easiest to start to recognize these things just by even observing how the sun moves through the sky during the day. So if we look at one 24-hour period, then there is a time of utmost yang and utmost yin. So utmost yang is midday, right? That's when the sun is at the highest. That's when the sun would be the brightest. So if you start there and then you start to transition into what we would consider like dusk or late afternoon, early evening. So that is the seed of yin within yang, right? So it's yin. It's the time of like, oh, yin is building now. We can start to see that transformation is happening. And then we get into midnight or the darkest hours of the night. We're in utmost yin. So the most yin time of the day. That's when you want to be sleeping so your body's actually restoring itself. So I would say those are like the hours of 11, maybe to 3 a.m. Those are the hours of the liver and the gallbladder, actually. So that's when we want our energy to be going inward. And then you get that dawn feeling, right? It's like maybe you don't see light yet, but you start to just notice there's maybe a little more energy moving. You maybe hear some animals or birds or something's starting to stir. That's the first stirring of yang, right? So that's yang within yin. So then that's like when the sun rises. And then you have building yang again until the peak yang, and then it just kind of keeps going through that cycle. So I think that's a really nice way to like just orient to the day. And then you can start to see how that's reflected for you internally. What do I notice when it's like the brightest yang? So if at the time of brightest yang, which would be, you know, midday, you have a lot of challenges, right? Like you say, let's say that that's when you have X symptom or something. It's you feel really tired or whatever the thing is. Then it's a reflection of your inner yang, right? It's a reflection of, okay, what's going on with my yang that at this peak yang time, my system is not matching that.
Oh, right? That's really interesting and a real simple way to look at it as well.
Yeah. So these are like, really, you can break these things down in such simple terms Of course, it can get really complex too, because we can talk about the yin and yang of each organ system, and organs have a certain aspect of, you know, some are more yin, some are more yang. And that's like, you know, getting into deeper layers. But it's also just a good practice to start to recognize how these work with be it within your own day or, you know.
Yeah, like start just simply. Like,
yeah, just day to day living.
Different is yin or yang more dominant during certain phases of your cycle or during certain mm-hmm. phases of your life, like pregnancy or postpartum?
Yeah. So if we look at the cycle, we could say the most yin time of the cycle is when you're bleeding, right? Because blood is a yin substance. You know, it's like a time where it's more restful. It's the yin phase of the cycle. And as you move through the follicular phase, which is typically, you know, is the first half of the cycle, let's just say it's typically 12 to 16 days long. So you lose the yin in the form of blood during those first few days. And then you immediately, your body starts building yin again. And that mirrors the rise in estrogen, right? So your estradiol starts to increase again after that big drop off. And you're building your yin, which in turn is creating more potential for yang. So there's a lot of confusion right now collectively around progesterone deficiency. Everyone has like a progesterone issue, which is true. And it's mostly rooted in how we're tending to our bodies that first half of the cycle, right? So because we need to build robust yin for that potential to then transform into yang. So ovulation is that transformation point when yin transforms into yang. And now we have this increase in progesterone, which warms the body up. It settles the mind in a way. It like maintains that higher basal body temperature throughout the rest of the cycle and warms the womb in a way so that potential implantation could occur.
So that is because there's so much focus on the second phase. There's so much focus on the luteal phase, and mm-hmm. really, like what you're saying is, I mean, obviously it's all important, but I do feel like there's so much emphasis on like the autumn and winter compared to like going into spring and summer. And I think it's easier because you have so much energy going outwards that it's easy to forget about yourself. You're like riding the wave of energy, just like woohoo.
Well, that's really common culturally too, right? Is we burn through our yin. We think like, oh, well, we can just, generally speaking, you have more robust energy in that particular phase of your cycle. The question is, how do you want to use it? We all have agency around how we utilize what we're given. And we can use that outward facing in the world, and we can use that in a variety of ways. And if you're really struggling with progesterone, which a lot of women are, then the question is like, how can we conserve your yin for your body to actually use it, for your system to actually integrate that increase in yin so yang can be more robust in that second part of the cycle, which is more yang in nature.
Oh, wow. So interesting. I've got so many questions, but I realize we're in a time frame. Yeah. Like, I'll just keep up with the work you're doing. So how does that work then during pregnancy and postpartum?
So pregnancy is a unique state of our physiology. It's a, through the lens of Chinese medicine, it is a normal state of excess. So typically we don't want a lot of excess in the body. When there's excess, that can create symptoms, and we might want to use, you know, heat clearing herbs if there's excess heat, or warming herbs if there's like excess cold. In the state of pregnancy, it's normal to have some excess. So what do we have when you're pregnant? You have excess fluid, right? You're carrying amniotic fluid, generating amniotic fluid. You have another organ system, right? So you're creating more blood. So you have like a little bit of excess blood. So these things, blood, more blood and more yin fluids, they create more heat in your system. they create a little bit of excess heat in the pregnant body, right? So now we've got like a lot of fluid, a lot of blood, some heat just generated from that, those additional fluids. And so from that angle, it's like normal for pregnancy to come with some symptoms of excess, where you might get overheated easily, or you might have some swelling from fluid. I'm not saying those should be bothersome or excessive. There's ways to work with those too, but just generally a healthy pregnancy is going to, a robust pregnancy will have some of those classical signs, like of just getting overheated a little more easily, maybe having a little bit of fluid retention. Because there's just more energy in the system. And the potential of that is also that it's in a way, it's easier to resolve and move through things during that time. Like acupuncture works really great when you're pregnant because of all the hormones flowing through your system. So those hormones act like little messengers, and your body's just able to integrate things in a little more easeful way, I find. And then it's said in some of the classical Chinese medicine texts that labor happens when yang chases away yin. So we have this big yin kind of fluid bubble around baby, and like the safe space for baby to be gestated in the womb. It's like this watery, dark, really magical place. And for labor to happen, we need yang to start to rise enough to chase away the excess yin, right? So you think of like at some point your waters will release when you are birthing, whether that's like usually not at the beginning, but it's usually more towards the end. And that's the real symbol of yang moving through the body to move the baby out. And obviously that takes a lot of capacity and chi, we would say, and blood for the body to do something like that. And so you arrive postpartum losing blood, losing fluids, losing chi, using your yang. So you do arrive in the postpartum time in a state of depletion, right? Or in a state of needing. We have a lot of like cultural narrative around depletion and that meaning a bad thing. So I sometimes don't use that word because I want women to understand that it's a normal part of our physiology that we just need to be replenished during that time. It's not like depleted, you know, something bad happened. It's like we decided, hopefully in a conscious way, that we were going to use our jing, which is our essence, and our resources in this way to bring forth life, right? I mean, it's such a beautiful offering. And that does require certain things. That requires the use of our yin, which is our mineral stores. It requires nutrient density. It requires so many things. So then we arrive in the postpartum time and we need to be mindful of that and be ready to build ourselves back up again, if that makes sense.
Yes, I've never thought of it like that before. And I really appreciate you bringing that word to light as well, depletion, because it does have this like shadow over it. But looking at it from this point of view, it's necessary for the movement. It's necessary for everything. It's just part of it. So how do we replenish? What would be the best ways to replenish during our postpartum?
Yeah, I mean, there's some basic principles that you can follow, which is like resting. So ideally, you would have those first 40 days, or in the Chinese medicine tradition, it's more of like a sitting moon. So that would be like 28, 29 days. Different traditions have different timelines, but generally it's a month to 6 weeks, depending on how your birth went. Some are easier, some are harder. So resting would be the top priority. Not using your eyes a lot for looking at screens or even reading, because our eyes require the use of liver blood, according to Chinese medicine. So during the postpartum time, we want our liver to be like able to store and regenerate our blood. So we would want to be resting our eyes a lot during that time, keeping the body warm. So as the womb is emptied, and you have that postpartum bleeding time, and it sort of creates this space where cold could invade. So that's just the terminology that we would use in Chinese medicine, is like the invasion of cold. So you'd want to, you know, be mindful of drafts, or if you live in a cold climate, a northern climate, then you would want to be covered. So you'd definitely want your low back and your low belly and your feet to be warm, like consistently. So those are some really basic principles. And then the other one I would probably add is like really warm, nourishing, simple to digest, easy to digest foods. So soups, stews, broths, not like cold salads and smoothies, more like slow, long cooked meats, broths that have simmered all day. Organ meats are great. Eggs are great. So lots of possibilities there, but almost always would need to include some type of animal fat and protein.
That's fascinating about the thinking about the eyes. I actually did a yin practice this week with this circle, and I was following the meridian line and seeing where it ended. So it's really cool to see that, and also how it's probably one of the things that is missed a lot because of our addictions. Mm-hmm. Because of our phones, and yeah, because of how many mothers sadly are in kind of an isolated state right now. Like, I really hope anyone listening that is not you and you have your tribe, but it can be that the phone is the thing to connect to the outside world to feel less mm-hmm. lonely. And it's really cool to like listen to what you're saying and seeing the pathway of it, to like get it into our intellectual mind of why it's so important to have downtime and the eyes closed as well. And I'm just wondering if this is like the same thing if we're going through big emotions, say grief or loss or something, a big emotion, would that be the same thing with the eyes? And would it be kind of like treated as a postpartum, you know, like how you keep warm and how you, mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it depends, because each organ system has a different emotion that will be associated with it. So if it's grief and loss, it's going to impact the lungs more than other mm-hmm. parts of the body. So yeah, of course, there are some general guidelines that may feel resonant and that you could follow, but I think it depends on what you're experiencing specifically. So if grief and loss is the example, then I would say like, okay, then we really need to be mindful of, yes, staying warm in general, because anytime you're going through a grieving process or a loss, you're decreasing what's known as your Wei Qi. Your Wei Qi is like another way to say your immune system, because that's what the lungs help support. So you'd want to cover your neck if you go outside, if it's windy or cold. You want to like be sure your throat and neck are covered. You may want to drink more warming drink or, you know, fluids or soups. So yeah, I would say it depends. It really depends on like what that emotional process looks like.
It's fascinating, isn't it? Like, me and my partner, we do a lot of energy work, and sometimes we try to track if we like lay back and we feel our body and see if we can feel where the energy channels run in without mm-hmm. knowing it. We don't look at the map. And it's really interesting to me where you can feel the movement of energy going and then seeing it on an image. Mm-hmm. And it makes perfect sense to be like, where, for example, if I'm having a big emotion right now and maybe my stomach's twisted, and like, how can you support that? Like, keep it warm, like be with it in some way. And I suppose, would it be different with each experience that everyone's having? Would it be that sometimes maybe you need more space and maybe more coolness, and sometimes it would mm-hmm. need more warmth? Is that how it works?
We each have such unique systems and unique orientations. So we can take the framework and then say like, okay, how does this actually work in my system? So what you're talking about is kind of like tracking your internal process, your internal sensations, and how does that reflect the state of your body, your overall body? But when you start talking about tracking sensation and sort of that can be related, obviously, to the whole meridian system, which is what I would call like a neurovascular system. So even though, you know, people say like, oh, well, you can't see the meridians in the body. Well, yes and no, because if you're doing like, you know, really integrated, like a really integrated look into human physiology, then we could say like, well, meridians are usually close to neurovascular junctions or neurovascular structures. And what's next to those? Connective tissue, right? So what's next to those is often some type of fascial network for a way which provides like a conduit for electricity to move through the system. And I mean, we're always learning even new things about how the fascial system works. But I would say that that's kind of how I orient to what you're saying, is like there's an element of how our neuroendocrine systems are working and how information is moving from one point to another through meridians or just through actual connective tissue.
So many layers. So many layers. I would love, I know we've been on here for a while already. I just flying by. I have one question. Finally for you. I'm wondering what's alive in you right now, because I know that you are constantly putting out information, sharing all this wisdom. Is there anything that is, especially from you just giving birth six months ago, is there anything that's alive in you that you would like to share? Mm-hmm. Anything that you're learning about, or it's just like, wow, this is coming through?
Yeah, I'm always learning. I love to learn. And I think that's like part of the reason why I'm able to share so much, is just like learning is just very much a part of my life. And I think what I'm interested in right now, I mean, so many things, but what comes to mind is I'm learning a lot about how our bodies interface with light. And part of that is because I moved from a very sunny place to a place that's sunny, but not as sunny. So that kind of initiated this whole understanding of how our mitochondria, which is like the, you know, like the part of the cell that generates energy for us. What does that mean? And how does that relate to qi from the understanding of Chinese medicine? And how does that relate to yang as we understand it through light, specifically sunlight, right? So I'm learning a lot about that, just like how our understanding of how the cell even functions is changing and how I can make sense of that through the lens of Chinese medicine. So that's one thing that's going on. And then another thing I would say that I'm really just moving through right now and like is really alive for me is just the trajectory of motherhood and how things shift and change over time, and like how I'm arriving into motherhood in a very deeper way right now as a mother of three, and how much grace I have for everything I've sort of passed through on that journey. I think there's so much emphasis right now on like the initiation of birth into motherhood, right? And that is true. There is a lot of truth in that. And there, for me, there has been nothing like the lived experience of moving through motherhood and arriving at a place in motherhood where you feel a lot more settled. If that makes sense. I didn't know that I was unsettled, and I didn't feel super dysregulated, or I felt like a mother. I acted in my day-to-day life as a mother. And now it's something changed. I'm still kind of figuring that out. But with this last birth, with so many other things that have been going on, I just feel like, wow. Yeah, it's like very, very rooted. And maybe that's because I've had almost one full cycle of Jing as a mother. So for women, a cycle, and I just put that together as we're talking, a full cycle of Jing is 7 years. So for me, it's only been, I guess, 6.5 years and maybe some change that I've been either pregnant or, you know, already had my babies. So it's just an interesting place to be, to feel like, yeah, I moved through like a mother victim archetype and just so many other ancestral pieces. And it's like, wow, I'm just in a very new place now.
Well, I got goosebumps because I'm really excited to see what work comes through, like what you have to share with everyone as you put it into like smaller bite-sized pieces for us all. Thank you for the work. And also, it just makes me think how, you know, the emphasis goes on to the child so much for the birthday, and to what you're talking about makes me think how, yeah, with this cycle, the 7 years, how to make space for the mother to see, like, to witness what is happening, mm-hmm. to reflect and have that time and that being powerful, because it is easy, amongst other things, like to get caught up in the child and everything surrounded, because they're amazing.
But yeah, also, of course.
They're amazing. But also there's so much depth to what is happening within us. And I can really feel that in myself. I've only been a mother for 2 years, but it's, I know I'm not fully, I can feel I'm not fully there.
You
know what I mean?
I'm like
a mother. I'm a mother and breastfeeding, blah, 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 but there's something like still hooked into another old way of being.
Yeah, there is. And that's normal. And I think we need to normalize that in a bigger way, because I know now I'm looking back on it and I'm like, wow, when I was 2 years postpartum with my first baby, like I still felt in some ways like this internalized pressure to have more experience than I actually had. Right.
Oh,
it's like I felt like, oh, I need to be like this sort of matriarchal figure. And it's like, no, just be where you are. That can be enough.
Oh,
and it's like we walk with other mothers. It's important to have mothers who are around the same stage of life as you. Right. Mm-hmm. It's important to have mothers who also have, in your case, a 2-year-old. Or for me, it's important to have mothers that also have multiple children, because we're just at different stages. And I can look forward and see that there's some of my mentors and teachers that I've had, you know, they have teenagers now. And I'm like, wow, I am not there. Like, that is not where I'm at. Like, they're navigating a lot of different things than I'm navigating. I think that's kind of where I'm at. I am curious to see, like, what will come forward from that, especially around, just the mother victim archetype in particular is kind of something I'm working with right now.
Oh, that's juicy. Like, when you were saying that, then I'm thinking, you know, it's so easy to feel like you're not enough or you're not like fully there when you look on social media, because everything is so, you know, like I've been trying to make that sourdough bread and make all these things myself and it doesn't work. I end up just making Play-Doh and I'm like, that's it. I'm like, I'm not going to be not one of them moms yet, you know, like it's not me right now. And that's okay. We make Play-Doh every day. So nice.
Yeah. Totally.
Thank you so much for being you, and thank you for the journey that you've been on to be able to bring all this information forward and for taking the time to do it. You have 3 little ones, a 6-month-old. It's truly incredible and really appreciated. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. I'm so glad to be here and I look forward to talking to you again.